This is HPR episode 2447 entitled Server Basics 104 OpenVPN Server. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 43 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu walks you through installing and configuring OpenVPN Server.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, this is Ken from HPR with an important... From Wednesday the 20th of December 2017, the media in the HPR feeds will be served via a redirect from archive.org. If you run into any problems, can you email admin@hackerpublicradio.org? We've done quite a lot of testing and I'd like to thank everybody who helped out on that on the mailing list. So nothing should change and nothing should be impacted. All the URLs are going to remain in the feeds. It's just that for new shows, they will... be downloaded via a 302 redirect to archive.org and they'll be downloaded directly from there. So we don't expect your problem. But if there is, contact us, it'd be great. The reason behind this is that Josh at anhonesthost.com, who's been providing our servers, has been receiving an unacceptable amount of traffic over the last period of, and that's resulted in slowdowns on the website and lots of issues. So hopefully this move will take some of the burden off the website. In addition to that, if you can throw a few shekels in the direction of Josh, we would appreciate it. If you go to any page on the HPR website, there's information there on how you help him. So once again, as of Wednesday, the 20th of December 2017, the media for the HPR feeds will be served via a redirect from archive.org. Thank you very much for your...
This is Klaatu, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is episode 4 of my Server Basics series, or sysadmin series, or whatever I'm calling it. In this episode, I want to talk about OpenVPN, or VPN, generally speaking. But before I get into that, I want to address some feedback that I got on this series. The feedback came from, well, X1101 on Mastodon, or Lyle from the Dev U-Random podcast. And he mentioned to me that, I mean, he's a sysadmin, longtime sysadmin, and he mentioned to me that while the series was good, I should probably at least acknowledge that if you go out into the real world and try to get a job, entry level, whatever, in sysadmining, you're going to encounter non-free software. Shock and horror. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of non-free stuff out there, and the chances are that wherever you work, you're going to encounter some of it. Now, when I started looking for work as a sysadmin with zero experience to my name, I looked very exclusively at jobs that were Linux or Unix based. So I didn't even entertain the idea of doing Windows support. I just didn't. And it meant that I was unemployed for about a year. I mean, I wasn't unemployed. I just wasn't employed as a sysadmin. I was working at a bagel shop. And that was great because I got free bagels. It was really, really a great job, actually. I'm thinking of getting back into that line of work. But as a sysadmin, when I finally did find the job, I did get a lot of Linux experience. It was great. But even though it was Linux, there's a lot of proprietary stuff that sits on top of that sometimes. So, you know, you might walk in and find that for OpenVPN, or for a VPN, I keep saying OpenVPN, for VPN, they might be using Cisco. And for virtualization, they might be using VMware. Little things like that. So just be aware that while I'm covering the open source stuff, there is stuff out there that is not open source. And you might find yourself having to deal with that. Now, what I have found in practice is that learning the open source stuff, as is often the case, teaches you so much about the principle behind the technology, really. The technology behind the technology, I guess. And in the end, you come out knowing just everything you could possibly know about that subject. And so when someone throws something proprietary at you, you may or may not have ever used it, But at least you know the concepts that you're going to have to tackle. And so you know kind of how to approach that closed source system. So sure, you may not know a thing about how to log into a Cisco box router. You may not know anything about the command line that Cisco provides you. But once you look up a couple of tricks here and there, you're going to see what exactly it is that they're configuring with different commands, and you'll be able to equate that with all the open source stuff that you actually do know. And it's a lot easier to sort of to tackle if you understand, all right, so this stupid command here is really adding a route to get my traffic to this subnet, blah, blah, blah. You know, and so it makes sense. And so I'm going to obviously stick with talking about the open source stuff, and I don't think Lyle meant for me to change away from that, but I will continue to talk about the open source stuff because that's what I know anyway, just with the acknowledgement that closed source solutions for the same technology, you're going to encounter them on the job. And unfortunately, a lot of people are going to, now I'm getting sidetracked again, but unfortunately a lot of people are going to sort of try to sell you on the idea that the open source stuff that you want to use is actually more to maintain. That's an old one. That's an oldie but goodie, and it just keeps rearing its ugly head. People keep saying it. And if you do open source wrong, then it's true. But then again, if you do closed source wrong, you have a whole set of other problems. So if you do anything wrong, you're going to be unhappy. So if you're doing open source correctly, you're going to learn it, and then you're going to automate the heck out of it, and you're not going to have to deal with it every day. And if you do closed source wrong, then you're going to use closed source, and someone else is going to take care of it for you, and you'll just never know what's going on within that box and where your traffic is actually going. And when something breaks, you're not going to be able to fix it because you're going to have to call in someone else to work their magic in their magic box. You don't want to do that, trust me. People are going to try to sell you on this, and they're going to say, well, we can take work out of your hands. You're not going to have to worry about this anymore. We'll set up your VPN for you. All it takes is this mysterious box in your server rack, and we'll manage it for you. And at some times you will be tempted to go that route. You will say, well, I'm still trying to work out my OpenVPN config files, and it's not working, and this is horrible, and I'm really busy, and people are yelling at me. All right, let's sign up with this service. Do not do it. Stick with open source. If you have any say in the matter, rely on open source. It will not steer you wrong. You might have to struggle to get it set up from time to time because you don't know it yet, but you're learning, you set it up, you automate it, and it's perfect. So that's just my experience. Now let's talk about VPN and why it's important. So VPN is kind of a big deal. It's almost, I would say, to the point that it's expected, especially within technical industries. Having a VPN and being able to access your work network from away from work is just expected. People expect you to have that set up. So if you get a job as a sysadmin, that's going to be one of the things that you're going to have to set up, almost guaranteed. Now, you might think, well, hey, I set up SSH at home, and I even poked a hole in my router firewall, and I can SSH to my home network from the cyber cafe, because we're pretending like cyber cafes is a modern term still. And that might seem really cool to you, and maybe you even do fancy things like 4x forwarding on over SSH. So you think it's practically like I'm sitting at home. It's amazing. That's not going to work on the larger scale, trust me, for a couple of reasons. Number one, because a lot of the closed source vendors out there and Windows admins and people who just generally don't know a whole lot about the Linux tool chain are going to say, well, SSH is horrible. It's a gaping vulnerability. You can't have that open on your network. And that they say that because they hear things about exploits, and they know that SSH runs on port 22, so they know that people will brute force SSH on port 22 as root, and they'll get in and they'll take over your network and all that other good stuff. Of course, again, you know, if you've done it wrong, which is, you know, if you didn't listen to the episode previous episode about SSH and setting it up and stuff, then yeah, maybe you would do something like that. But of course, in real life, you personally would not do that. You would not run it on port 22. You would run it on some other port. You would not have passwords even enabled, much less root login enabled. And you would have something sitting in front or sitting between that SSH port and the rest of the system, such as fail to ban or whatever. So it's not really an issue. But people will say, well, SSH is not good. So they will frown on SSH because they believe that it's a bad thing. And they will say, no, you have to use you have to use VPN. Because everyone knows VPN's perfect and nothing's ever gone wrong with VPN. So that's what they'll say. Now, the other reason, the actual reasonable reason that SSH will not stand up to VPN is that VPN provides a network. SSH is just a shell. That's what it stands for, secure shell. So in order to use SSH, you're logging, when you use SSH, you log into a computer, and you are presented, as you probably know, with a prompt. And a lot of people don't know what to do with that. That's not a useful thing for a lot of people. So providing them with access to one computer on a network and a prompt, it's pretty limited. So VPN is a virtual private network. It provides not just a computer, it provides an IP address. So your computer stays the same. It's the one that you're actually typing on. And you inherit everything else on the network, whether it's IP addresses, access to networked printers, access to internal information management systems, you know, maybe a internal wiki or something like that. Important services like maybe if you are sick for the day and you need to go into the system and apply for, you know, a paid day off, maybe that runs on the internal network. And in order to reach that, you have to log in to the VPN so that you can get to the server within the network that runs that sort of thing. So it's an important sort of service to provide to your people, to your crew, because it provides them a network away from the office with encryption and a pretty darn good set of authentication options. So what we're going to set up today, well, what we're going to set up in this episode, because this is quite a complex process, to be honest, is a VPN server. And then in the next episode, I'll step you through setting up the VPN clients. We'll just work to get essentially the connection going. That's the hardest part I have found. And OpenVPN is such a big technology with so many different options and, frankly, a lot of different use cases. It gets pretty overwhelming. It would be overwhelming if I tried to step you through all the different options. So what I'm going to do is get you running a VPN so that the server and the client can talk to each other. We're just going to get them to ping back and forth over the same subnet. And from there, you can try to sort out what you actually need to know on top of that. I, in my experience, the initial configuration, figuring out the certificates, and pinging back and forth, you know, getting that connection to actually function, that's the hard part. After that, it's just a matter of adding other stuff on, other features. Maybe you want a different kind of authentication, maybe you want to add in some TLS, whatever. That stuff you can look up after you've got that connection going, once the pings start responding to each other. So in order to install OpenVPN, you'll need two different things. One is the OpenVPN package itself, which will be in your repository, certainly. It's already installed on some distros. Certainly it's already on Slackware. I don't think it was on CentOS initially, but yeah, like I say, it's in the repository. And then you'll also need something called EasyRSA. And EasyRSA used to be part of the OpenVPN package, apparently, and then it got sort of forked off into community support, quote-unquote, meaning it's its own project now. Confusingly, there are two EasyRSA versions that are still sort of equally in use. So if you go online and look for instructions on how to do all of this stuff, you well may come across a tutorial that just happens to have used RSA, EasyRSA 2, Or you may stumble across one that uses RSA-3, and that'll be confusing. I'm going to go with RSA-3 because that's sort of where everything's going. But just be aware that there are two very... RSA-2 is still pretty, I guess, popular, or there's a lot of use still of easy RSA-2, presumably because a lot of the server distros, are very slow to change and update because they test everything first, and so open RSA-2 is still just what they've got in their docs. Okay, so with that out of the way, you need both of those packages, OpenVPN and EasyRSA. On CentOS, certainly, you would need to enable the EPEL, that's the extra packages for Enterprise Linux. You can look up on the Fedora site or the CentOS site on how to do that. Okay, so the first thing that you have to do for OpenVPN, really, is come to grips with the fact that you're going to be managing a bunch of keys. So you remember in the previous episode when I was talking about SSH, and how you should not use passwords, and you should use SSH keys. And that's all kind of built into SSH, and it's pretty simple to manage because you've just got SSH key gen, and you're just generating keys and passing them out to your users, and it's pretty simple. Well, OpenVPN is a little bit more like, I would say, for instance, PGP, if you've ever tried to use PGP for your email, or GNU-PG, whatever, or OpenSSL. And OpenVPN is a lot more like OpenSSL. In fact, it actually even uses an OpenSSL library. So it doesn't have the infrastructure that, for instance, SSH has kind of built in to juggle all these keys around. EasyRSA is kind of our easy solution to doing that. So once you install EasyRSA, which I've just done, then it usually dumps this folder of scripts or a script, depending on whether you're using two or three, into some shared location, and generally speaking, I don't believe I've ever seen it anywhere else but /usr/share and then /easyrsa. So they really mean in their docs, they tell you to do this. So what they're really intending for you to do is to copy -rv/usr/share/easyrsa just to some location that you want to use it from. So I'm just going to kind of copy it to my home folder right now. And then I'm going to change into that folder. And I see that there's an EasyRSA script, there's an OpenSSL-1.0.conf, and there's a vars example, and then X509 types. So EasyRSA itself is a shell script, and it's right there, so I'll just do a /EasyRSA. The first thing that I need to do is create my public key infrastructure, which everyone just refers to as PKI. And the command for that is /EasyRSA init -PKI. And it tells you, okay, init PKI complete. You may now create a CA or requests. Your newly created PKI dir is /home/cloud2/EasyRSA/PKI. Great. Okay, so in the folder now that we are in, if you do an ls, you'll see that there is a new folder called PKI. And if you look in PKI, you see that there's a file called private, and there's a folder called private and a folder called rex, and they're empty. That's fine. That's expected so far. Okay, so that's just set up the infrastructure for our PKI. Now what we're going to do is, as it kind of told us, or as it hinted for us, is we're going to create a CA, or a certificate authority. So /EasyRSA /build-CA. And that generates a 2048-bit RSA private key. And it prompts us to create a password for this private key. Now notice, you might notice that it's telling you it's putting this private key in the PKI directory that we just created with that init PKI command. So I'm going to enter a really embarrassingly simple password just to keep it easy for myself. And then, don't do that in real life, but since this is just a test environment, I'm just using the bare minimum password, which is 4 characters. It will enforce a 4-character password. It will not let you just enter a single character. But anyway, you shouldn't be doing that anyway. I'm just doing that so that as I type and talk, I don't have to remember too many strings. So now it's asking me for a common name, which is your user, your host, your server name, whatever. So it can be pretty much anything, but I think what I've always done is I've just used the host name. So I'm going to use Darkstar, which is not actually my host name, but that's what I'm going to do anyway. Now, again, The CA creation is complete, and you may now import and sign cert requests. And so it says your new CA certificate file for publishing is at /home/clatu/easyrsa/pki/ca.crt. So that is the CA, the certificate authority certificate that we have created. Now we're going to create something called a request.slash/easyrsa/gen, that's G-E-N, like generate, dash R-E-Q, like request. And then the thing that we're creating the request for is our server, which we can identify by the name that we created that CA for. So I had put in Darkstar, so that's what I'll do. Now again, it is asking me for a passphrase, and again, I'm doing like a ridiculously simple one, and it's asking me for a distinguished name, or a DN, and that is, of course, again, Darkstar. Okay, so now we have just, we've a key pair and a certificate request have been completed. Your files are, for the request, /easyrsa/pki/rex/darkstar/rec, and the key is in the same place, except pki/private/darkstar/key. So now we need to create a certificate for our server. And the way that we do that is /easyrsa /sign-req. So that's sign-req. So it's a sign request, space server, because that's what we're generating it for. That's the literal string server. And then space Darkstar, which of course is the name of our server that we, you know, that's how we're identifying it. So you say, you press enter on that, and then it tells you, it kind of tells you what your request, you know, it summarizes the request, and the subject is, okay, well, here's your request, you're about to make a certificate with a common name of Darkstar, type the word yes to continue or any other input to abort. So I'm going to type yes. Confirm request, yes, and then it asks me for the passphrase of my, for this certificate authority. So I created that, and I made it really stupid simple, which hopefully you're never going to do. And then I hit return on the keyboard, and it generates it really quickly. It tells me where it is. It says it's in EasyRSA PKI issued darkstar.crt. So we'll need that later. We'll move that to a different location. But first, the server needs to have a Diffie-Hellman file to look at. And the command for that is OpenSSL dhparam. That's dh as in Diffie-Hellman. Param, like parameter, P-A-R-A-M, space dash out, and then some name. Generally speaking, the default name is dh2048.pem. And then space 2048, and that tells it obviously how many bits this should be. Usually the default name is dh2048.pem. It might be something different in your example OpenVPN config file, so just kind of pay attention. Eventually make sure that name is something that you actually set. I find it easiest just to use the convention DH2048. I don't see any reason to do anything but that. And that's still actually generating on my computer, so I'm going to pause this as that generates. Okay, it's done. Cool. That took no time for you. Now, this next step that we'll go through together, we're not actually going to use the key that we produce during these two episodes, but it is important because it's a key that you would need later on if you're going to add in extra features, specifically TLS authentication on top of all the OpenVPN handshakes that occur, which helps set up kind of a firewall to block denial of service attacks. So it's important, but not essential to get this thing working in a secure manner. It's just an added feature that you can go in and investigate later for yourself. When you do that, though, you will need to generate a TA.key, and if I don't tell you how to do that, you might get confused and think that it's a key that you already generated. Well, as of now, it will be. It's a key that you'll generate, we won't use, but you might use personally later on. And this, we actually get to use the OpenVPN command, finally. I mean, it's just to generate yet another key, but, you know, whatever. So you do an OpenVPN space dash dash gen key, that's generate key, gen key, all one string, space dash dash secret space TA dot key. TA dot key is the traditional name for it. Like I say, it stands for TLS auth, and you do that, and that creates the TA dot key, in your current directory right alongside of all the other files that we've been generating. Well, not all of them, but right alongside the dh2048.pem, certainly. Okay, that's all the setup for the well, it's not all the setup. That's all the key generation that we need to do right now for the server infrastructure. Now we have to move everything to where OpenVPN is going to be looking for them. So the dh2048.pem, since it's right here in the current directory, we might as well move that first, goes to /etc/openvpn/certs. And if the subdirectory certs does not exist, you can create it. You'll obviously have to do all of this as root. So you can just do a make /etc/openvpn/certs. If that doesn't exist, that's okay. It will create it. And then you can move the 2048 into there, the dh2048.pem, into that directory. And I'm sorry, I should be clearer here. When I'm saying move, and what I'm actually doing is copying. And I do this for a very good reason, and that is that all of these keys, we're going to want to archive. We're going to want to back this stuff up. So you want to copy all the things that you've generated from this directory to the rest of your system. And then at some point, you will want to tar this directory up and put it in a safe place so that if anything happens, you have all this information. You don't want to have to revoke all of your keys and make all your clients update and regenerate all your client keys. I mean, you might if there's a breach or something, but if your server crashes, you don't want to lose this. Back it up. So I'm copying, even though I'm frivolously saying move. I mean copy. And then you'll also want to create makedir /etc/openvpn/keys, K-E-Y-S. And if that doesn't exist, you'll want to create that. And you'll want to copy the ta.key to /etc/openvpn/keys. And there's more. So let's copy the CA cert that we created, which, remember, EasyRSA placed in the PKI directory. So you'll copy PKI/CA cert to /etc/openvpn/certs. That kind of makes sense if you really think about it, because, yeah, .crt goes into a certs directory. Makes sense. You also have to copy the server-specific cert to the certs directory. So that was placed in the PKI/issued/darkstar.crt, and you'll put that into /etc/openvpn/certs. And then you'll also want to copy the key, the server key, the private key, which, again, placed in PKI/private this time, and it's called darkstar.key, and you can put that into /etc/openvpn/keys. So if you really, really think about it, I'm not saying it's intuitive by any means, but I am saying it does kind of make sense if you look at the kinds of files that you have generated, which are practically magical. But if you look at their extension and you kind of look at what kind of directory structure OpenVPN's main configuration directory has, it does kind of make some sense. Okay, so once that is finished, it's time to set up the configuration file. And I think that key step is probably the most frustrating, and it's one of the least well-explained things on the internet in terms of when you go to look up how to do OpenVPN configuration, because generally all the how-tos just kind of rush through it, which, I mean, to some degree I have as well, but they kind of just... they're throwing all these generation commands around, and you have no idea what you're generating or where they're supposed to go, and it gets really frustrating. So anyway, on to the configuration step. The first configuration we need to do is the server configuration, so that OpenVPN, when we start it, knows that it's actually running on the server, that it's not in client mode, that it's in server mode. So we'll do so server.conf is the file that we want to do, and it really kind of depends, again, on your packager, like where did you get OpenVPN from? How did they set it up for you? Where is server.conf? If server.conf is nowhere to be found, you can find it from, or rather within, the OpenVPN source code that you can download from OpenVPN. So if you go to openvpn.net, just go into the community wiki, and then on the left-hand side you'll see downloads, you go to downloads, and then you'll see all the different tarballs and things that you can download. So download one of them, and inside of there you'll find in slash, let me, I'm going to actually start, I'm going to just do a cat of slash home slash clatu slash downloads slash openvpn blah, and then there's a folder in there called sample, and there's a bunch of folders in there, and there's a folder called sample config files, and in there, sure enough, there's one called server.conf, and that's what I want. So I'm going to redirect that to slash etc slash openvpn slash server.conf. Simple as that. And now I can open up server.conf in Emacs, and this is, and I mean, that those sample files are actually really, really good to look at, because it kind of gives you a bunch of different use cases. So there are lots of different configuration files in there. Some of them will still be a little bit confusing, I guess, because you won't know what you need and what you should activate and deactivate and that sort of thing. But a lot of them do at least give you a notion of what is possible. And I mean, some people I've read like to just, they're so SSH shy that they just like to use OpenVPN as just for a single computer-to-computer type of connection, which you can do. You just have to set it up for that. And there's a sample configuration file, I think, in there, if I recall correctly, for that sort of setup. So lots of good config samples in there. Okay, so anyway, we're setting up a server right now, so let's talk about that config. So what I've got here is, first, I mean, if read through it, as I said, but the first thing that you need to look at is the port 1194. That is the default port for VPN traffic, and you can keep it there. I guess if this is your first time ever setting up a VPN, I would say keep it there, just so you remove variables. But if you want to change it, you can. Then the next one is the protocol. Protocol that I think is the default, I guess, is UDP. I don't know why you would need anything other than that. There may be valid reasons. I'm just saying I've always set it up with UDP. All right, next, the device. The device to use on Linux certainly would be the tunnel device, T-U-N, TUN. I think I've used a tap interface before. I don't think it was for VPN. I think I want to say it was for bridging something from QEMU or something. I'm not sure. But anyway, TUN is the default, and that's what I'm going to go with. And it's generally what I would say that you should go with. Although, that said, I have no idea if you have to use TAP on Windows or if there's a tunnel option for Windows on that. I'm not sure. Okay, next three lines are going to be looking for your certificate information. And luckily, we know where those are because we put them there ourselves. So the first one is the CA, the Certificate Authority Certificate, is in my case, I put it in slash etsy. So I'm changing this in my config file. OpenVPN slash certs slash ca.crt. I happen to know that that's where I put it. The next one is going to be looking for the certificate of this server itself. So that's cert space slash etsy slash OpenVPN slash certs. I put that in certs again, or as well, slash darkstar.crt. And then the final one is the key, which this is the secret key. So slash etsy slash openvpn slash keys slash darkstar.key. Now, if you put them somewhere else or you named them something else, then obviously you would want to adjust that for your use case. And then after a little bit of more comment, it asks for the Diffie-Hellman parameters. And for that, dh space slash etsy slash openvpn slash certs slash dh2048.pem. And that's just, again, kind of the default stuff. Okay, so topology, subnet, that's fine, I don't care. Down here, there's this thing about configuring the server mode and supplying a VPN subnet for OpenVPN to draw client addresses from. So this is essentially establishing your own little private DHCP pool that you want OpenVPN to use when clients connect. So I put in here server space 10.8.0.0, that's the default subnet, and then space for the mask 255.255.255, so in other words, don't touch 10, don't touch 8, don't touch 0, and then .0 meaning yes, hand out that last number. We can skip over the ifconfig pool persist, we can skip over server bridge, we don't need to do that because we're not using a tap device. Now, there are a couple, I mean, you're going to have to come back to this configuration file depending on how you want to configure this stuff. But right now, since you don't know how you want to configure it, I'm kind of skipping over a bunch of this, the options. But there are a couple that you'll probably have to look up and kind of see how you want this all to go. One of them being the redirect gateway definition, which that's kind of a thing in OpenVPN. You might have to use at some point. So TLS auth right now, we are going to leave that off. So if that's not commented out, comment it out. It's an important one, and it uses the TA.key that we generated earlier, but it adds a variable to the connection stuff. So if we have time, we'll go back to this and try to turn that back on. But for now, we're going to leave it off just for simplicity's sake. Now it says cipher, AES256CBC. And we're going to need to put that also in our client configuration, so don't let me forget. Then there's compression, and we could use a couple of different types of compression. To keep things simple, we're just going to do the comp-lzo compression. Technically speaking, that's not even all that necessary, but we're going to do it anyway. Max clients is 100. So we're just going to uncomment that and say, well, we're going to do max clients as more like 10, just because this is a test. User nobody, group nobody, yeah, you want to uncomment that so that we're using unprivileged users here. Persist key and persist ton. We're going to kind of, I guess we'll just leave that as is. That's one of those troubleshooting things that if something's not working, sometimes you have to go back and comment that out as you troubleshoot. Output a short status file showing current connections, truncated and rewritten every minute, status openvpn-status.log. So I'm setting the log location, and then I'm going to set the log append location to log-append space slash var slash log slash openvpn.log. And once again, that may be, that depending on where you got your OpenVPN package from, that might already be the default. Now for verbosity, we can set that pretty high right now, so while we're troubleshooting. So I'm going to set that to verb 6, which is sort of debugging, and that's a good thing to have. Now you can do 9, but I find that that's too much and it just flies off your screen way too fast, but you can resort to that if you're having a lot of problems. And then I like to mute 20, which means if there are 20 of the same messages in a row, it will not write all 20 to the log file. And that's about it, I think. That's everything for this file. That's the server configuration. So I went through that pretty fast, but a lot of those were the defaults anyway, so that's a good thing. And to be honest, a lot of these options you're going to have to come back to and set some other way, because your use case is probably going to differ from this test case. That said, I want to be very clear. The options and the values that I put into that config file, they will work for you. You can do exactly as I was doing. You don't need to customize the IP addresses or anything. Those are standard OpenVPN expectations, like the port numbers and the IP addresses. So you can use those exact same values. Unless that is your home network happens to run 10.8.0 as its main network, then you'd want to change the subnet that you are then creating. That's a pretty oddball default, though. I doubt that you're using that. So you should be able to enter the exact same values as I entered into my config and get an OpenVPN server up and running. So what we'll do now is we'll start OpenVPN just to see if it's working. I mean, we don't have any clients set up, so it won't really be all that exciting, but at least we'll see that it works. So what we'll do, well, actually, first, before we even do that, do an IP space A, and or you could do, if you want to do it the longer way, IP space adder space show. And that should show you all of the that's the new if config essentially. So IPA will show you IP space A will show you all of your network connections or your network interfaces rather. So there's the loopback device, there's the ETH device, the actual Ethernet port, and then there's your wireless port or your wireless card, whatever WLAN 0 or whatever your one is called. So that's good. Now we know. Great. And now we'll do the OpenVPN start thing. So it's OpenVPN. is the command. Now, there's a dash dash config option, but if that's your only option that you're passing, you don't have to use that. So you can just tell it, you can just do /etc/openvpn/server.conf. And now it just gives me a prompt back. It gives me my prompt straight back. Well, that's kind of crazy. So if you do a pgrep openvpn, no, nothing. Pgrep vpn, no, nothing. Okay, so I don't think this thing started. Well, let's do a cat of var log openvpn log. And you'll see in your log that, yeah, it actually failed. So it says options error, dash dash explicit dash exit dash notify cannot be used with dash dash mode server. So then if you look in your /etc/openvpn/server.conf, down at the bottom of that file, there is a notify the client that when the server restarts, so it can automatically reconnect. And that's set to 1. So we're going to have to set that to 0. And then if we do an openvpn/etc/openvpn/server.conf, it prompts us for a password, private key password. Now we know our private key password. We created that earlier. So I'll enter it. And then it just kind of hangs. So if I switch over to a different terminal and do a pgrep openvpn, I do see that it is working. So the reason that it appears to be sort of just frozen is because we didn't demonize this process. And that's okay. I wanted to be able to see that everything was working, and I wanted the feedback. So I'll go ahead and control C out of that. Now I can restart it again and do daemon dash dash daemon daemon. Let's call it Darkstar VPN, and then we'll do a dash dash config, because now that's not the only option we're using, /etc/openvpn/server.conf, and now if I start that, then again, it just gives me my prompt right back. So that kind of felt like a failure again. So let's do another cat on our log file, and sure enough, it's a failure. So it says, okay, can't ask for inter-private key password. If you use dash dash daemon, you need to use dash dash ask pass to make passphrase protected keys work, and you cannot use dash dash auth no cache. Well, I didn't use dash dash auth no cache, but neither did I use dash dash ask pass. So now I'm doing it again with dash dash ask pass. It asks me for my password, and it gives me my prompt back, but that felt a little bit better. So let's do a pgrep VPN. And yes, I get a 5092. That's the process that it's running at right now. Yours will be different. And so that means that OpenVPN is running on our server. So that's great. That's huge. That's a big deal. Remember when we did the IP space dash A before? No, space A before we started OpenVPN? Do that again. IP space A. Now this time, you might notice you've got a new network interface, my friend. You have loopback. You have ETH 0, you have WLAN 0, or whatever your wireless is called, and then you got TUN 0. That's a new tunnel interface created by OpenVPN. Now things are getting exciting. I'm going to close this one out. We've got the server, the OpenVPN server up and running, ready to accept clients. We have 0 clients configured, and that's a whole other, it's a whole other thing. You will be making lots of client keys, ostensibly, because that's the one-to-many relationship. You've got your OpenVPN server and lots of different clients. So rather than trying to cram all the client stuff, both the key stuff and the client configuration into this episode, I'm going to break it into the next episode where we'll configure clients, we'll launch the OpenVPN client on the client, and start pinging back and forth. It'll be fun.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.